Please listen carefully.
And now, live from the attic that smells like a basement in McKinney, Texas, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, featuring two guys who know better and do it anyway, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
And today on the podcast, in a bittersweet way, we touch back on something that we've done many reviews about. We've talked about a lot. It is the fourth chapter or section or not season, fourth part.
Of season two, yes.
Of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on Netflix, which we've done reviews and talks about many times before because we like it.
Oh, we've enjoyed it so far, yeah. And this was the newest installment, just came out Christmas or New Year's Day, maybe?
Yeah, it was Christmas-y time. I think it was listed as December 2020 release. So
over the holidays.
So what's Sabrina, if you didn't know? So Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is kind of, well, I wouldn't call it a reboot when you've got so many versions of it in comics and stuff, but Sabrina the Teenage Witch was an Archie comic spinoff that was most popular for a while, I guess, as the late 90s turn of the century sitcom, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, with Melissa Joan Hart. And then it got reboot again in kind of the Riverdale-verse, the new kind of darker or grittier or whatever. It's part of the gritty movement, I guess.
Yeah.
As The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. It was a comic book first and then became a Netflix series. So we've been watching it the whole way through.
And enjoying it.
And it stars Kiernan Shipka, Ross Lynch, Lucy Davis, Chance Perdomo, Michelle Gomez, Jason Clare, Tati Gabrielle, Richard Coyle, Miranda Otto, Gavin Leatherwood, best name ever, and Lachlan Watson, and tons of supporting characters in this. And I have to say, once you get to, and of course, we're going to spoil tons of it. It came out, well, a couple of weeks ago. So if you haven't watched it and you want to watch it, go watch it.
Yeah. But we're going to spoil it all. And it's been out.
So where we last left off, I didn't go back and see what kind of ratings we gave. Did we give pizza ratings to it on part three?
I think we had, I don't know if we did pizza ratings. I know we had some nitpicks with it, but overall we were still going to pick it up when it came back. So
yeah,
you know, it left us in a good place to be curious to see what happens next.
If we were better podcasters, we would have looked back and see what our pizza ratings were. This is what happens when there's just really the two of us running everything. We don't have a staff or anything like that.
Yep.
So sorry, everybody. If you want to know, go back into the archives and see what we said. I remember having a problem with the silly Daisy zombies and stuff that were at the end of the last part.
Yep.
But the last part, they dealt with like the pagan witches, and there was kind of a war between the witches.
Yep, they were setting up the Green Man.
The Church of Night kind of got blown up and abandoned, and they switched over to Hecate, which is like the Greek goddess of witches, instead of worshiping Lucifer Morningstar, a.k.a. Satan. So that was a whole crazy thing. And the biggest thing that ended up happening is that Sabrina went down two timelines. So there was two Sabrinas, and they each decided to, Sabrina herself couldn't decide, do I want to be queen in hell? Because I found out that my actual real father is Lucifer. Or do I want to live my life as a teenage witch in Greendale? Which is funny because Community's in Greendale. So we had a whole conversation as, is Greendale Community College a thing in that Greendale? And realizing how weird that show is, Community.
I think it might be. I would believe it. Different timelines. Maybe it's multiverse or whatever. But yeah, same Greendale.
Really same Greendale. Anyway.
But they bring back the ultimate, like, that's the ultimate Sabrina conflict. That's what we started with season one. Like, does she want to be immortal? Does she want to be a witch? Does she want to be immortal? Does she want to be queen of hell? Like, it just continues. It's awesome that it's still a thing.
Yeah, so she basically runs in doing this kind of time travel stuff. She runs into herself, and they decide to do both.
Yes.
And that's kind of the crux, the cliffhanger where we left off. Like, what will this mean? There being two Sabrinas. It can't be anything good according to her cousin, Ambrose.
Yep.
Who, again, Ambrose still, even through this whole part, he's my favorite.
Oh, he comes in clutch. He's the star, the secret star. Yeah.
Chance Perdomo, kudos to you, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. So that's where we start off. And we also, too, this is also goes back to, and I was right. I was so glad I was right. Didn't I mention how Father Blackwood had this egg?
Yes.
That seemed very Lovecraftian to me. And yeah. I believe I mentioned it.
Mm-hmm. The internet now calls that the time egg.
Yeah. And so I was right. The whole point of the season is dealing with Lovecraftian monsters.
Yes. Eldritch Terrors.
Yes, known as the Eldritch Terrors. So we're probably not going to break this thing down super hard. We're just going to kind of, there was 8 episodes in part 4, the second part of season 2. So weird how they broke it down. But
and conveniently, there's 8 Eldritch Terrors.
Yeah. And also, too, we have to mention that Netflix is increasingly becoming more like Fox.
Yes.
For some reason. And despite how rabid a fan base something has, unless I guess they're making crazy money off of it. I don't know how they determine. As far as I know, Netflix isn't making any money. It seems like they're going bankrupt from every time I see it mentioned in the business pages.
But how many people you know, like how many people do you know that don't have Netflix or aren't borrowing somebody else's Netflix? Maybe too many people are borrowing. I don't know. There's a lot of people who have Netflix.
But it seems like basically they canceled Sabrina, and even though it seems pretty popular and a lot of people are upset on the internet about it, but Netflix is pulling a Fox, like how they would just like, I don't care how cult a following this is, just boom, see you later, canceled.
Yeah, they're operating based solely on numbers. Like they find that if a show lasts 2 seasons, like people tune into it, but they tune out after like the 3rd or 4th season. So they're just cutting their losses, which is so dumb.
It's dumb because it's obvious, and I'm going to say this up front, it's obvious at parts of this, especially near the end, that they were operating on the fact that they were going to get another season.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And it's also even more clear because the creator, who's very, his name is, do you know how to say his name properly?
Roberto Aguirre Sacasa?
There you go. I'll take that. Anyway, I didn't want to mangle it, so I'll let you do it.
Happy to.
He is also the writer of the comic book too, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he's going to go ahead and do the rest of it in the comic book. So there was a planned rest of it.
Oh, that's cool.
And I guess part of that rest of it was supposed to be the crossover between Riverdale and Sabrina.
Oh, yeah.
As well.
That kind of happens a little bit in this part 4, but that would have been awesome.
Would have been awesome, but Netflix says no. So Netflix is making me angry because my family was really into Anne with an E, and that had gotten to a point where they could have done a nice final season.
Yeah, yeah.
But they just were like, nah, we're done. And this seems like it could have warranted another 8 episodes and then been done. So Netflix, I know you're not listening to me, but for the love of Pete, stop acting like the old school media companies and just be on Front Street with these guys and tell them, you get 2 seasons unless it's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever that algorithm they figured out is. Just tell these creators up front so that they can plan for that.
Yeah, or if it's not even a 2-season limit, like come to some compromise where you know how long it takes to the story, because when it's unresolved or rushed, you can feel it and it's always a bummer. Like it's never good. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a little foreshadowing as to some things we feel in this. So we will start off with the first episode, chapter 29, The Eldritch Dark.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the first Eldritch Terror. But right here, I have to say, they're bringing back, like we were saying, the ultimate conflict of Sabrina choosing mortal life versus supernatural life. Another thing they're bringing back that I love is the first season was all about like Monster of the Week. That was one of the highlights we said in our early reviews of it. That's an aspect of the show. That there's a new monster battle every week. And this is, for being part 4, the power level and the power creep has worked out perfectly because she's gone to heaven. She's gone to hell. Now we're going to the outer realms, the cosmos with the Eldritch Terrors. And it's still Monster of the Week. Like, what terror are we facing this week? So I love that just as a principle, but The first one is the darkness, and that comes in the form of creepy-looking miner dudes that come back out of the mines to essentially steal everybody's happiness, joy, soul, and light and make the world a darkness.
Yes, they're making the world. They're literally taking out all the light. And we have a kind of sub-B story, subplot. I don't know what you want to call it, because there's actually multiple different plot lines going through here, which is kind of part of the problem later on, because they had to resolve them a little quicker than I think they wanted to. But there's a subplot of Father Blackwood, who is now started a tent revival Church of Night. But what were they called? It was called the...
It was like the Church of the Shadow or something now.
Yeah, but basically... He is now reading from the books of Lovecraft and is now like kind of a priest of Lovecraft.
That he's also writing down or dictating or something? Yeah.
Something, yeah. It's interesting. So that's where he's gone off to. And as such, he is kind of the herald of these terrors. He's the one who, because he found the time egg, I guess, it's all part of his plan. He's trying to bring about the end of the world, Armageddon, I guess.
Get those witches once and for all,
Yeah, basically. Get them once and for all.
But yeah, he cracks open the egg and the darkness comes. Did you ever see the Doctor Who episode that where they go back to like World War II London and there's little ghost children wearing gas masks?
No.
Okay, so that's one Doctor Who episode that sticks in my mind. But that episode is creepy and this episode ups the creep factor by about two just because like... There's something so ominous about a darkness that doesn't have a face, you know? Like, it's a cool monster. So the fact that they're kicking off the Eldritch Terrors with this is really cool. And they don't all know what's going on. They all have the separate interactions with different miners, and they're all like, oh, crap, something's going on. But this leads to, I guess I'll bring it up here, this leads to one of my early complaints about this season four. I guess it might be because they knew about the cancellation or whatever, but... Everything seems to go right the first time. Like every idea they have, first idea is best idea kind of stuff. And
yes.
So somebody comes up with an idea, that's the solution, and it's on to the next thing. And that's present right at the jump, first episode. Sabrina's alone. Oh, there's another Sabrina. You know, all that stuff.
Yeah, it was basically, yeah, there was a lot of Sabrina knowing exactly what to do without any context of how she got there.
Yeah.
In this, I noticed, or Ambrose or whoever. So, of course, Ambrose has always been kind of the let me do research and we'll figure out what we can do.
Yeah, he's the Hermione, yeah.
But this time, a lot of times it was just Sabrina was like, oh, I know what to do. I'm just going to go get the other Sabrina out of hell and we will contain the darkness. And it wasn't even a will that work. It was like, I'm doing this. And then they did it. And at first you think something's going to go sideways, but it doesn't. So the end.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, that was kind of a all too easy sometimes.
Yeah. But for that, that last scene where it is two Sabrinas battling the darkness was a great scene. Like them coming together.
For sure.
Because the whole episode sets up like Sabrina is dealing with loneliness and being alone now that she's chosen mortal life. She's not sure if she's happy. And then they go to like the ultimate darkness where the darkness speaks to you and knows all your like insecurities and interferes and all that stuff. It's a lot like the new Pixar Soul, if you've seen that, which was pretty crazy to me. But no, that was just a great scene.
I did see Soul. It's a good movie.
But you know how I'm saying, like, there was that field of whatever that they drive through where the people are, like, repeating their bad thoughts to themselves and building up their coal bodies, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's the darkness. That's an Eldritch Terror.
Yeah.
Weird crossover.
So they basically trap the darkness in a giant light bulb.
Yep.
And at first I didn't realize, well, okay, so now you got it trapped. But then it comes later that it's kind of what they're doing. They're trapping Eldritch Terrors.
In that yellow room in the dollhouse, which is like the ultimate catch-all for anything bad, I guess, because it's out of space and time.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's such a great narrative, I guess, narrative armor or just a narrative plot point. It's like, oh, anything we don't want to deal with gets stuck in this, our good void.
So it all kind of blends into me. I don't know what, like some of the through line of the subplots kind of blend into me. So I'm just going to talk about this now because I think what you're talking about, how the show seems to at first, until like the second to last episode, I think, we're focusing on the witch Sabrina in Greendale.
Yes.
And that's the main character. And the Queen of Hell Sabrina is just kind of like the side character, or, you know, she's not the Sabrina the Teenage Witch that the show is talking about is Sabrina the Teenage Witch, not Sabrina the Queen of Hell.
Yeah.
Which is a different show, I guess.
One is Spellman, one is Morningstar. Yeah.
Right. So it kind of comes across that, and I don't know if they ever resolve this. We'll just talk about it now. Hey, I don't know if they ever resolve that. It starts to come across as the main character, Sabrina, the Sabrina Spellman, made the wrong choice.
Yes.
Because it seems like Sabrina Morningstar is like super happy.
She's getting married. She's living her life. She's being a queen. I mean, she doesn't seem to have any complaints.
No, she doesn't seem to have any complaints at all. Like, it's awesome. Like, Caliban, this Clay Prince guy, he's like, I know he tried to kill us, but hey, man, he looks great without his shirt on. He's got a cool
look at those
accent.
Abs. Yeah.
He actually turned out to be pretty noble. I'm having a great time down here. We party all the time.
Yeah.
It's like Vegas 24/7.
Meanwhile, Spellman's like, all my friends have boyfriends or significant others, and boo hoo, I'm seventh wheel or whatever.
But was that, I never felt like that was fully resolved. I mean, it was kind of like they had the whole thing where Nick Scratch, her old boyfriend, is kind of like, I kind of want to try this again. And then she's like, I'm not ready. And it's like, but you're lamenting the whole time that, I don't know. I don't get it. I guess I don't get teenage girls anyway, but never have. But it's...
Well, I think that's also bringing back the conflict from part three, because like she went to hell to save him and he turned out to be a weirdo, you know, so they got to have that teenage drama carry through because that never goes away in 30 minutes or less.
Yeah, I guess. But that was her hang up. But I mean, yeah, I guess she did finally realize that, hey, man, he'd been through a lot. So that might have been why he was acting like a weirdo.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, if he's still hanging around and you're still hanging around, why not? You crazy kids, get together. Be in love.
Kevin Love. His real name is like as good at his character's name.
I can't decide which one is better.
Yeah, Nicholas Scratch is an awesome name for a warlock, and Gavin Leatherwood is also an awesome name for a warlock.
Warlock tends to be like chaotic bad, right? So
would
Gavin Leatherwood be like the lawful good, like sorcerer, maybe the opposite?
Yeah, it almost sounds like a paladin name.
There you go. Gavin Leatherwood. Oh, and Nick Scratch. Yeah, I can't decide which name is better. That's hilarious.
Oh, so anyway, on to the next episode, chapter 30, The Uninvited. This one was awesome.
Yeah, I was going to say this. I think that out of all the Eldritch Terrors, I think this one was my favorite.
Yes. Tell us about The Uninvited, Mikey, since he's one of your favorites.
Okay, so the great opening scene for this episode, but it basically sets up the premise that The Uninvited comes in the form of a homeless man, a wanderer, just a guy in rags pushing a shopping cart that I guess society would ignore if you want to get into the message of it.
And he smells terrible.
Oh, smelled like rotting dead things, I guess, because Eldritch Terror, why not? But he knocks on the door of this lady's house and she opens it up. And because he smells bad and looks weird, she's like, no, I'm not going to let you in. And because she doesn't let him in, he goes in anyway and rips out her heart because she was so heartless.
Yes.
That's great.
And the poor little daughter, like, what, mommy? Oh, it was such horror movie stuff.
There was a second, I wasn't sure if Netflix was going to show it, but they did the cutaway, like, you know what happened, but we are going to show it. I was like, how far are you going, Netflix? Because season four seems to, I think they upped the ante as far as like gore and scare goes compared to the other season.
Oh, for sure. So yeah, The Uninvited. He was super scary, and the whole part where he can't speak because he doesn't have a tongue.
Yes.
When he goes into Father Blackwood's new church is now moved into like a strip mall or whatever. Out of a tent.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, okay, well, let's get him a tongue.
And Agatha goes and gets him a tongue, and Miss Wardwell is there, and she sees Agatha covered in blood. She's like, where did you get that tongue? And she's like, don't ask questions. And they put the tongue in him, and it works.
Don't ask questions. Yeah. That's part of the whole thing. Miss Wardwell, who was for the longest time possessed by Lilith,
yep,
is now back as the teacher, and for some reason fell into this cult of, do you know? I never fully clear to me why she fell into it.
They only explained it one way, and it was in quick little flashes, but she was sort of having like PTSD flashbacks, like non-flashbacks. And she was having flashes of when she was Lilith, but not understanding what they were.
Mm.
But she knew there was darkness involved, or she was cursed or something. And so when Agatha comes to her and she's like, are you feeling lost or cursed? Then come to this meeting. You know, we're here to save you.
That's right. That's right. She was going door to door, like trying to get converts. Ah, yes.
Yep.
Now that makes so much more sense. I guess I didn't put two and two together there. Yes.
Yep. But yeah, so Blackwood gets the uninvited. He, you know, decides to serve him. And it's just, it's the Eldritch Terrors. It's preying on people's humanity and compassion. It's so cool. It's so abstract and otherworldly. I enjoy the principle of the Eldritch Terrors just as a whole for this season. It's pretty great. But because Blackwood is now serving the uninvited, he does give him the mission to go to Aunt Hilda's wedding.
Yeah.
Go try and be invited there and see what happens.
Yeah, because I guess the trick with the uninvited, and we find this out with Roz and Harvey,
yep,
is that if you invite the uninvited in and show him hospitality, he'll just hang out for a little while and then take off.
Yeah.
And you'll get to keep your heart. So it's almost a test of compassion.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, Roz and Harvey are nice people, so they let him into the garage.
And Roz uses their cunning to touch the uninvited, and that's how they get most of their info about all the Eldritch Terrors.
Yes, indeed. Oh, yeah, yeah. Because then later on they have relations and do some kind of psychic transfer.
As Shakespeare would say, they know each other, yes.
Yeah, they know each other. And then I guess Harvey sleep draws all the Eldritch Terrors, which is kind of cool.
Oh, it's supernatural. It's great. But it makes me wish I could sleep draw. I'd get so much more work done.
So as we said, Father Blackwood's plan is to get everyone's heart ripped out at Aunt Hilda's wedding.
Yes.
By having the uninvited go there uninvited.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're also dealing with Dr. C's incubus. He's possessed by an incubus.
Oh, that's right. That is the B plot. Yeah.
Yeah. They're trying to get it out before the wedding night because it's an incubus.
Yeah. And it overtakes Theo for a little bit, which was a little cheesy, but kind of awesome.
Yeah, what'd you think about like the band, the Fright Club band?
I'm all about the Fright Club. That just makes me miss jamming in garages in the bands that I was in. Why? What's your take on the Fright Club?
No, the thing is like, what kind of show do you want to be exactly? Sometimes it's caught between. I mean, we're talking about this, the uninvited and the gore and the coolness of this monster. And then we're going over to this kind of old school Archie, hey, Sabrina's friend have a band thing.
Yeah.
And to me, it's not on the same. I don't know. It's they're too far apart to me. There's kind of like, I'm not saying that it needs to be, but I don't know.
I get you.
It comes across as kind of silly, kind of cheesy a little bit. It's not like the reason why I like Sabrina is because there's some bones of Buffy in there, and there's some bones of Whedon stuff in there, but what Whedon does better than they do with this show is that the humor and stuff that's in there, that Whedon-esque humor, that's almost kind of like Star Wars humor, kind of sits better in there. It just feels better in there. I mean, I know Buffy did a musical episode, but that was a whole different deal. It was all justified, but if Buffy and the Scooby Gang had like a little band and stuff, it feels very like Scooby Doo to me. It feels very like oh, now it's time for the band to play, you know, and we're actually gonna have you sit through them do a song.
I get you,
and I know part of it is because Ross Lynch, who plays Harvey, is an actual musician.
Yep,
and they were probably throwing him a bone, which they also did on like Happy Days to some of. I mean, it's.
Yeah, trying to help out their crew's career. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, I guess. But at the same time, it's like in order for Donald Glover to do the Childish Gambino stuff, he actually had to leave Community.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't just be like, oh, now Troy's a rapper.
Yeah, they didn't write it into the show.
Yeah, so I don't know. It just
the only really justification for it is that season one Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is much like the comic book, and the comic book was always a blend of supernatural and horror with like pop culture and silliness, you know. But because we've power leveled up to battling the eternal cosmos and the Eldritch Terrors, and it's the legit end of everything existence, it feels weird that you still have to balance that out with being like, hey, they're also in a band and running for student council. Like,
yeah,
it has its place, but now the balance is totally shifted and it seems weird.
It does. And, you know, actually, I did read another review of this where they were saying like, and I don't know what chapter that's in. It's kind of a side thing, but when they do run for co-presidents of the council, the school council,
yep.
They're like, why did you waste so much precious time on that?
Yes.
In this show was this critic's concern. It's like, hey, the world is being invaded by Eldritch Terrors. Why don't you focus on that, build that out a little bit, help progress the storyline of all these other characters and how they're dealing with everything.
Yep.
It's you're right. And that person is right too, which leads to my point in that, yeah, you've kind of power leveled up. You've kind of changed what the show is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so there you go. That kind of thinking explains why there might've been the last chapter, season, whatever, we'll just call it season, has the daisy eyed zombies. Cause if you're doing something kind of camp, I guess,
mm-hmm.
then that would fit. But I think they were kind of stuck in between two worlds here.
And
just like Sabrina.
But like you were saying, when it comes to like the Whedonverse and all that, every time Buffy scales up or Angel scales up, the silliness tends to scale down. And I think they could have used more of that in Sabrina. So I'm with you.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Is there anything else in the... That.
The Uninvited shows up to the wedding. Really, the only casualty is Dorian Gray. Sad to see him go. But they end up pulling a switcheroo on him, and Sabrina takes him to the wedding in hell, where we see Sabrina Morningstar marrying Caliban. And then the two Sabrinas team up again and trap him in the dollhouse, which is narrative plot protection. Be like, oh yeah, just put him here. We'll get to him later, maybe.
They invite him into the dollhouse, and now he's stuck there.
Yep.
So that there's another, like, that was easy.
Yeah, first idea, best idea. Let's go. We got a whole bunch of story to tell and only one more season to tell it in.
So we go to chapter 31, the weird one.
Ooh, the weird, which is the appearance of what I thought was going to be a whole lot cooler version of Cthulhu, but it's sort of Cthulhu-esque, maybe?
Sort of. This one was disappointing to me. This is where we're introduced to the witch MRI or whatever.
The ancient X-ray. Skin,
which was,
You don't buy it?
it was silly, dude. I thought it was silly. It was where, like, basically the weird gets in Sabrina.
Yes.
And that's the long and the short of it. And he does, Ambrose does a body scan of Sabrina and basically lays her down on butcher paper and runs his magic wand over. And why don't the rest of the witches have magic wands? Anyway, he runs his magic wand over her, and then it gives him like a body scan, but it looks like it was drawn by the guy who created the show, I guess, for the comic book or whatever.
It's like an old lithograph looking thing.
Yeah, and just a little drawing of the weird in there, and just it was goofy to me.
I get it.
I get having the paper and having the wand. That's all fine to me. Just the way the scan looked was silly to me. It was just like, there's just a little illustration of the guy hiding behind your liver.
Yeah, it's
whatever.
It's like an old-timey Operation board game kind of drawing. Be like, here's your organ. Here's your stomach. Here's your brain.
Well, and that was the thing, too, is that it just had the relevant thing they were looking for in the scan. I mean, if you're gonna have an illustrator go all out, just have an illustrator do like all the organs in there, like make it look like a Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, absolutely.
The show,
yeah.
But make it look like a Grey's Anatomy drawing, and then have the Eldritch Terrors stuck in there.
Nope, this is like a play school version of an anatomy book with a really detailed octopus sitting around her liver, where it starts off and then ends up in her brain.
Like overly detailed. I don't know. I thought that was silly.
But this is the episode where they kind of set up what you were talking about. Apparently there was a planned crossover between Riverdale and Greendale and Sabrina and all that by the creators. And we get the silly B plot of Sabrina trying to make a boyfriend out of wax. And then a new kid shows up, which I was totally convinced was the wax boyfriend, but they pulled a 1-2 on the audience. And it was just Lucas from Riverdale who got freaked out because he saw everybody sort of possessed by the weird and threatening to kill himself. And he was like, this chick is crazy.
Oh, so that was someone from Riverdale? I didn't even know.
Yeah, it was a one passing line.
Oh, well, I know, but does that character actually show up in Riverdale? Do you know?
I have not watched Riverdale, so I can't say.
Well, neither have I. Yeah, man, I was actually really disappointed about they just kind of did away with the wax boyfriend thing.
Yeah.
I was really looking forward to seeing who the wax boyfriend was.
Mm-hmm.
Because Caliban's made out of clay.
Yep.
So I wanted to see the dude made out of wax. And it was supposed to be like all the best parts of Harvey and Nick. And I was like, ooh, who are they going to cast for this? I can't wait to see what he acts like. And then she just put him down the drain. That was very disappointing to me.
Nah, I'm with you. But that falls in line with Sabrina's like, I don't need no man. I can do it by myself with my other Sabrina. And we're going to take on the world, I guess.
Well, I know. That's fine. But geez, man. Like you said, that was a perfect opportunity to have that new kid be like the wax guy and like have her like go back to her room and go and look in the bathroom and it's not there anymore. And she's like, oh, what?
Yeah, see?
You know? And you still could have got rid of him the same way and had him just take off or whatever happened. But she just, I don't know, man. I was disappointed in that decision.
Rushed writing. We'll blame it on the cancellation, I guess. But who knows?
Yeah.
But the weird is another example of sort of instant solution. They decide that because the weird is in Sabrina's brain / subconscious, that they'll get the pestilence witch, Pesta, to rot her brain to make it uninhabitable so that the weird jumps out into an octopus that happens to be nearby.
Yeah, and to keep her faculty, she's supposed to focus on something that she never would forget. So she starts singing 16 going on 17 from Sound of Music.
Starts 16 going on 17.
While her nose is bleeding and she starts to lose it. And then here comes Hero Nick singing the other part of the duet with her to do it. And again, it's like they've gone campy on this thing where, I don't know, man.
Yep. Saved by the power of song. What do you mean you don't believe that? Come on. No, I'm with you.
I do believe that. But like I said, you have to stick with a theme, I guess, is what I'm saying. You're either going to be all campy, teen angsty, kind of scary and sexy.
Yeah.
You know, or go like this is like, you know, X-Files type monster of the week.
More serious, yeah.
More serious stuff. And they're still kind of mixing the two. And not to say it has to be serious and dark all the time. X-Files had its light, funny moments.
Mm-hmm.
Buffy had its light, funny moments. But like I said, it's kind of like the Star Wars thing, where Star Wars has these funny moments in it, and it's not meant to be a comedy movie.
Gotcha.
So I think it can be done a little better. I think they kind of lost the thread as the seasons went on.
I'm with you.
So, again, they get the weird out and freeze it in a fish tank. And hooray, everything's fine again.
Another trap terror. On to the next one.
So the next one is chapter 32, The Imp of the Perverse, which I thought was going to be, I was like, oh, here we go. Sabrina's known for having like overly sexual stuff in here. And I was like, I was thinking like, oh, it's like perverse, like pervert. But
yeah,
it was perverse, like pervert, but as in perverting reality.
Yeah, twisting reality.
So this one, basically, this is where we meet a character the fans have been talking a lot about, the Tinker Man.
Oh, I love it. Tinker Salesman, the purveyor of fine trinkets.
Yeah, and they're trying to figure out who he is. And I guess that in Lovecraftian mythos, there's a kind of character who's like him that has a crazy Lovecraftian name that I can't pronounce properly. It looks like Hephaestus, but it's not. That's the god from Greek times. And then also some people are saying, oh, is that God?
Oh.
Because Lucifer at some point mentions, like, if Eldritch Terror's involved, the false god's going to be tinkering or messing or something along the line. I don't know if he says the actual word tinker.
I believe it, though.
But it kind of alludes to that fact.
That'd be fun. It's interesting. They never outright say it, but I could get behind it.
So anyway, he has a the Imp of the Perverse, which is like this little statue, which is a cool looking statue.
Brass monkey. Yes.
And Father Blackwood gets his hands on it, and you can make a wish on it. So he wishes to be the emperor of everything from forever.
And going back, he's retrofitting it, too.
Yeah. So then we get this kind of Third Reich type Greendale.
Yeah, it's totally Hitler Blackwood, yeah.
But the thing was, is like, I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm thinking, so just Greendale, you're not, why aren't you in like Washington or, you know, London, or since you're British, but Greendale, that's where the headquarters of your empire is.
That's the start and end of our show, Greendale, yes.
It should have tipped them off that something was odd, because they do kind of resolve it in a little bit in that Ambrose. So basically, he's a witch hunter, basically, like the purge the witches,
yep.
Purge the heretic. It's almost like Warhammer 40,000, which is interesting because Warhammer 40,000 kind of has that Third Reich look to the empire, and they're big on purging the witch, which are actually psychic people.
Yeah, getting rid of the magic.
Yeah, so Ambrose gets pegged as a witch because he is. And he's like, I'm getting out of here. I'm getting out of town. And as soon as he gets out of town, he's like, what the heck is going on? Yeah. I'm Ambrose Spellman, and what's happening here? And there's the Tinker Man again, and he's like, hey, how's it going? And it's kind of like the Imp of the Perverse is an imp after all.
Yeah.
Okay. The line was clunky. It kind of made me groan. It could have been written a little better, the mm-hmm. line, but they were kind of like, hey, isn't this obvious? An imp is impish. They're like, the imp is impish or something. It was like, come on, man. I get it. You could have just said what I think I said the wrong one. I think they said the imp is impish or it was something like that. Whereas they could have just said he is an imp after all.
Yeah. Mention him as a trickster or, yeah, use a different word other than just saying that the definition of this word is the word.
But basically the fact is, that, yes, the imp is a trickster. So he literally only made it within the borders of Greendale.
And at first I had a problem with it, but now that we're talking about it now, I can see the justification of it because the Imp of the Perverse is like the other sort of trope, which is the curse of the monkey's paw. Like you get your wish, but there's always a little catch to it. And so yes. The catch is that it's only Greendale. Good job.
So that kind of explained it, which I'm fine with, but it's kind of funny that I guess because the problem with Father Blackwood's wish was I was that forever.
Yes.
So he forgot who he was before. So he wasn't sitting there going like, hey, man, only Greendale?
Oh, this is a jip. Wait, I made my wish. This is the reality I wanted. Okay, all is good.
Yeah, so I guess I just talked myself out of it.
But we do get the cool thing because Ambrose goes outside of Greendale and meets the Trinket Man. He gets the, the Stone of Omphalos? The ancient Greek word, but it's the stone that Kronos started or swallowed to start the whole universe. That's crazy. Yes. That's great lore that they're just throwing in there.
Yeah. And he's like, if I get this back to see this one, as odd as it was, and the fact that it's like Emperor Blackwood and the kind of silliness that was happening here. See this one.
Yes.
This one had the camp and the silliness that would go along with the kids having a band.
I believe it.
Do you see what I'm saying? This episode kind of fits more into what you are saying the first season was.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. This was more of a first season episode. So maybe this is one of the best episodes.
I think it definitely does benefit from being Bizarro Universe, so they figured they could play around with it a little bit more.
Yeah.
For as serious as it was over the top, both in threat level and in campiness, so I guess
yeah.
This is where they found the right balance.
And it was Ambrose figuring out what needed to be done.
Yep.
And having to like rush back in there with the help of
Robin the Hobgoblin.
Yeah, which he doesn't look or act like a hobgoblin at all. I don't know why they didn't make him some other kind of fairy folk. Hobgoblins aren't fairies. But anyway.
Isn't a hobgoblin a mix between fae and goblin?
Is it?
I don't know. That's just a guess.
D&D hobgoblins were always like leaders of regular goblins.
Oh, okay.
They were like in between an orc and a goblin in my mind always.
For some reason, I was thinking they were half-breeds or whatever, but okay.
I always thought they were kind of half-orc and half-goblin, but I don't know. I'd have to go get my monster manual. Actually, you know what? I have a monster manual right here to my left. I'm not kidding.
Go for it. Oh, that's awesome. There it is, monster manual. While you're looking that up, I will say Robin does help out Ambrose, but this is Robin only gets maybe 3 or 4 moments to shine in this last season, but I do think all of them are real cool. I like Robin as a character, even if he is not accurately hobgoblin.
Okay, let's see. Hobgoblins are a fierce humanoid race that wage a perpetual war with the other humanoid races. They are intelligent, organized, and aggressive.
Ooh.
Hobgoblins have their own language and often speak with orcs, goblins, and carnivorous apes.
Okay. What? Okay. Does it say anything about fast speed or weird colored hair?
Let's see. Hobgoblins are nightmarish mockeries of the humanoid races who have a military society organized in tribal bands. Each tribe is intentionally jealous of its status.
Like a carnival crew. No.
Hobgoblins feel superior to goblins or orcs and may act as leaders for them. In such cases, the lesser races are used as battle fodder.
Ooh, okay.
Hobgoblin mercenaries may work for powerful or rich humanoids. It says nothing about hobgoblins being half fairies.
So the Sabrina took liberties with it and made it their own thing. But why not call it something different? I guess people know the word hobgoblin.
That's the thing, is that there's tons of fairy folk and fey folk.
Yeah, yeah.
That you got, like, just fairies, dryads, right?
They could have made him a sarter and just have him wear pants instead of having pointy ears. He could pull off his pants and be like, I have goat legs, but I run real fast.
Something, yeah. Nymphs. They had Pan in the season before.
That's right. I guess that's more pagan than it is fey. Oh, well, never mind.
Well, but still, the satyr is kind of fairy folk. There's tons of fairy folk.
Yes.
There's brownies and pixies and dryads and nymphs and...
Sprites.
There's sprites. Yes, there's so many of them.
Yes.
There's so many of them. Hobgoblin.
So there's one tick against Sabrina. Hobgoblins weren't used appropriately, and we have voiced our complaint.
Oh, man.
But he does help out in this episode. He helps Ambrose get the stone to Sabrina. They make stone soup. Thanks, Hilda, for being a lovely cook and a great witch and a great aunt. And the resistance party that they meet all gets to drink the tea and wake up and overcome the perverse Father Blackwood. But Father Blackwood now has the mark of Cain, and he's immortal because his wish came true. He's the emperor for all time. But, of course, it's like we were saying earlier, it's first idea is best idea. They decide to set a trap for Blackwood. They go there. Sabrina figures out that the Imp of the Perverse is now in Blackwood's dog, Anubis. So she makes a wish on it because now she's in possession of it, and she wishes it, just make it go back the way it was, and poof, things go back to the way they were. With the exception of Blackwood, who is now headless because Prudence finally got her wish and she gets to decapitate her father now that the things have been put back the way they were.
Mm-hmm. And now his head is on a plate under the table like at a Halloween party.
It's so silly. Like, that's the right amount of camp. Like, I believe a headless, you know, a headless Blackwood on a platter more so than I believe in Fright Club, I guess.
No, yeah. Again. You're dealing either with world-ending stakes or you're in a fun time band.
I prefer the fun time band. I don't know if I want to face the end of the world, but that's just me. But after the Imp of the Perverse and everything is put back the way it was, now we go even larger scale. We're up to the cosmos, and we realize because we found out that Roz is now a sentinel and there's a new batch of weird sisters. So Roz, Prudence, and Marie Mambo, great character in this season, have discovered through their Sentinel Watch that the cosmos are colliding. Hell is showing up on Earth, and Earth is showing up in Hell.
And it's all Sabrina's fault for splitting herself in two and being in two places at once, just like Ambrose said.
Oh, just like Ambrose said, because Ambrose is the secret star. He's like the R2 of this.
He is the R2 of this.
But yes, two Sabrinas cannot coexist at the same time. It's a paradox. It's an anomaly. And now the planets are crashing together to fix it. That's cosmic scale. That's great.
So what did you think of their observer room? That was kind of like, What do you think of their observer room with like the planets and the cosmos is like floating or floating around in there?
It reminded me of a scaled down version of what we saw in the new Dark Crystal. Like Roz was the new like watcher. Like that's all I could think of.
Yeah. And I thought the same thing, but to me, it looked like a high school production of the Dark Crystal.
Yeah, exactly.
The little orbs and planets and stuff that they had there, like in the Dark Crystal, it was like so cool looking. It was all like kind of steampunky or whatever, and yeah. The way it all swirled around each other. And this was, it literally looked like their local high school production of the Dark Crystal. We need to make the observer room. So get the art kids on it.
Yeah. Make some props. Make them glow.
Yeah. I thought they were kind of goofy looking.
It was kind of goofy looking. But I guess to balance that out, they did give us cool things like we get to see Metatron. We get to see an actual angel. And the costume work on that was pretty cool and the whole voice thing.
You thought so, man? See, I don't know. I guess.
You prefer Alan Rickman as Metatron from Dogma?
Yeah, I guess, sort of. I mean, the angel being robotic and stuff was kind of odd to me. And then my kids were making jokes that they wanted to see I don't know, seeing that meme going around, biblically accurate one that's like a bunch of eyeballs with like tons of wings and stuff
and circling rings.
And I was like, actually that would be like really cool.
Well, for as much as like they're pulling from lore and mythology, like for as much as they're taking liberties with it, they do pull in a lot of stuff and treat it kind of well. So that would have been cool to see biblically accurate angels.
Yeah,
absolutely. That would have fit at least.
Yeah, that's what it would have fit and been crazy looking, and you could have still used the same crazy voice because it would have made more sense with that. But yeah, like we said before, sometimes, and this is kind of why we like it, sometimes it does fall into the realm of Stargate and Hercules, the Legendary Journeys, and Xena and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and this was kind of that in a lot of ways to me.
I got you. But as always, since we're doing Monster of the Week, there is Solution of the Week. And the main conflict for this episode is Metatron tells both Sabrinas, because they are a paradox, they have one of two choices. One can die or they can merge together. It's like we can separate the twins or make them one twin. What do you choose?
So they decide to merge together.
Yep.
And so I had a lot of struggles with this. Help me through this, Mikey.
Okay. Because
it's both families. You got the Morningstar family
with
Caliban and Lucifer over there. And they're like, this Sabrina is the Sabrina.
It's our Sabrina. It's the real one.
Yeah. And then you have the Spellman family. We're like, no, this Sabrina is the real Sabrina.
Yeah.
And they never answered the question in that timeline. One of them is the real Sabrina.
Yes.
And to me, the answer to the question really is, well, which one to use the real Sabrina? Because then the other one has to go.
Oh, that makes sense.
But both of them treated it like that was the real Sabrina, and they had no desire to, it wasn't even mentioned, to figure out which one's the real Sabrina.
It would have been an extra 30-minute episode just on paradoxes, I believe.
I guess, but I don't know.
According to Wikipedia and the narrative through line so far, for as much as it's still there, the Spellman is the one we've been following for the show. So from our perspective, the Spellman version is the original version. And the Morningstar was the one that originated from the time loop of last season.
Right. So there you go. Then get rid of that one.
But I like
that. And where did Lucifer get so possessive all of a sudden? I mean, Caliban was trying to kill her. Lucifer he was acting like Satan.
He was
supposed to act. And now he's kind of like just deferring to his daughter and just a happy, proud papa. It literally seemed like that was a different timeline, Lucifer.
I believe it. And he even flip-flops towards the end of this season. I think he was just a casualty of having to wrap it up quick writing because he never really gets fleshed out properly at all.
Yeah, I don't know. There was a lot of leaps in that one. Anyway, so they decide to merge. What happens?
Instead of merging, Ambrose, R2-D2 of this season, comes in. He's like, wait, no, the cosmos aren't merging. It's actually there's an alternate cosmos that's encroaching upon us. So there's
it's over there in the corner now.
Yeah. There's more globes. The art kids finally finished up the second half of them and put them on the stage. So We now have what they call a Rocosmos, which is weird terms that I learned from this show. But yes, there is an alternate set of cosmos that they decide to send Morningstar, I believe. Yes. They send Morningstar over to alternate Earth to see if that'll balance it out. So there's not two Sabrinas existing in two cosmos or one cosmos.
But wouldn't there be a Sabrina over there? Wouldn't there already be two? There'd be like three Sabrinas over there.
They have episodes to get to. We can't explain it too much. Just go with it.
That's where this, I really started to lose me on this one, because I was like, what? No, that makes no sense, because that would say that that cosmos over there, which he said would be pretty much identical to this one.
Yes.
Which means that there's still the same problem over there, or at least if it was the non-messed with cosmos, there'd still be just the one Sabrina over there. So sending the other Sabrina over there would make the problem again happen over there.
That's true. This is off the dome justification for it, but they assume it's exactly like theirs, just slightly different. But as far as this cosmos is concerned, this is the Eldritch Terror they're facing. So because it's an Eldritch Terror, it's going to be perverted and twisted and weird and dark. And once we get to this universe and we see it's like a Truman Show universe, I mean, it's not like their universe at all. So it was never meant to be an exact copy. It's more just the Eldritch Terror is trying to cause havoc. Like, here's our weird universe that part of you is now trapped in. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But Morningstar goes through a mirror and then ends up being greeted by...
Oh, yeah.
The original aunties from the original Sabrina show.
Yes, the Melissa Joan Hart version. Still Aunt Zelda and Aunt Hilda, but two different women entirely.
Yes, and there's a laugh track, and then Father Blackwood comes out like the director, and we're like, what the heck is going on? And what's weird is that I'd seen the trailer, and the trailer was longer than that scene that was in the show.
Yeah, they cut it down.
So I was like, what's happening right now? And then we don't get paid off until two episodes later, because in between is another Eldritch Terror episode called The Return.
Yes, they happen simultaneously.
I guess technically they happen simultaneously. So The Returned one is basically, I want to say it's a Night of the Living Dead, but they're not living. They are living, and they were dead.
Yes.
But they kind of are as they were when they're not zombies.
Nope. But they are the dead returned, and they're peaceful. They're kind of like the uninvited, whereas if you treat them right, they're okay. But if you let them know they are dead, they have it like, you know, they snap and they're like, what? I'm dead? No, this isn't as it should be. Like they say, waking somebody up from a night terror kind of stuff.
Yes. I like this episode too. I think this episode fit in well. I think this episode, I guess because it's more of the creepy horror and not like the gory horror or like the jump scare horror, I think that fits in better with what we're trying to do with Sabrina. I think maybe, see, as we talk through this, I come to realizations. And I think my realization is that they should have leaned into, if they want to do the Fright Club stuff and the kind of campy stuff, they should have leaned into the more creepy horror, the weird horror, the kind of maybe more like a X-Files type stuff, the stuff that's a little less gore and slasher and guts and more just like, well, this is weird. What's this so strange?
Yeah, no, I get you.
Because I think you can get to between camp and strange easier than you can between like Friday the 13th and camp.
Oh, exactly. And especially like this episode deals a lot with Mambo Marie and like voodoo and weird sort of not campy magic, but sort of more spiritual, occult, weird than it does like straight up dark gothic stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you.
Anything stand out on this episode to you? Nitpicks, likes?
I'll start with the plus. I really like the plot line with Mambo Marie where she goes to play games against Lazarus. That's an old trope, like, you know, you have to cheat death to get your boon. So Mambo Marie does that. It's a real great plot line. But this is balanced out by being my least favorite episode because the Battle of the Bands is atrocious. Like I couldn't hang at all. I like Satanic Panic. I like the punk rockers coming out of hell. The plot device is cool, but like the cosmos looks like a high school production of, you know, the cosmos you were saying earlier. They put a high schooler in charge of picking the music for Battle of the Bands and how that all played out. It was just, I couldn't hang.
Yeah, I thought it was way too silly, and it was mixed in with, so like I said, you have the good of that creepiness with people are being back, and then Satanic Panic, this band is back, and that's kind of cool, but then they just brutally murder this other band, and it's so gory and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's so intense. And then you're, then you go to this like goofy battle of the bands thing. That's like a totally, it's like there are two totally different shows happening in one episode.
And they're just jumping between them.
Yeah. And then like, and Sabrina gets up there with her band, and I guess because they're witches, they have enchanted instruments that they know how to play, or they just know how to play them because they've been alive for so long. Or I don't, and again, I think that was like, hey, Kiernan can sing, so let's get her. I don't know.
But you're Sweet right. Child of Mine is the song you're going to play to win over the universe. Like, you're playing for your ex-boyfriend's dad and for all the undead to go back.
Yeah, it went Bill and Ted. This is like Bill and Ted.
Absolutely.
And it would be like if in the middle of Bill and Ted, when they're back in olden times trying to escape from the castle, right? Remember that part of Bill and Ted?
Oh, absolutely.
If they like brutally just murdered the knights in there, and it was just gory, and like one of the knights was getting like dragged back into the dungeon, you know, in a pool of blood.
Yeah.
And that was in the middle of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. That's basically what this episode was.
Yeah. And it's way too late in the game for that type of silliness. It was out of place.
Yeah.
Entirely.
Yeah. I'm glad you feel that way, because I wholeheartedly agree.
Ugh. And Satanic Panic is walking down the hallways to a filter song, not a punk song. Their Battle of the Bands entry is like a Kiss song, not a punk song. I mean, come on. You're off on all these vibes. But you do get the subplot of Mom Boomerie. You do get the subplot of Dr. C's mom coming back and Hilda having to face off with her. That was all cool. That was like Psycho-level horror, you know, the suspenseful. All that's great. But, man, that Battle of the Bands just took me out of this whole episode.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on to the next one, which I think was interesting but could have been done a little better. So now we get the payoff where we move over to Sabrina Morningstar in this strange world where her two aunties are the original aunties.
Yes.
And the thing that struck me during this whole, basically she's stuck in, it's the endless is the Eldritch Terror you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And the day starts over and over and over again. It's almost like a Groundhog Day thing.
Very much so, yeah.
But she finds herself, she's like on the set, this weird kind of meta. She's on the set and they have a script to do. And if they mess up three times, they get sent to the green room, which you don't want to go to. It was kind of cool. It kind of almost was like an X-Files-y thing.
Yeah,
but I think that they missed a great opportunity. I really think you could have still done all the same stuff. I think they should have been on the set of the original Sabrina. I think they should have rebuilt that set. They probably didn't have the money for it, but it would have been so funny to me if it was like literally that set.
Oh, that would have been great. That they probably don't exist anymore, but if they were able to bring them back, that would have been a nice little twist. Yeah.
Yes. I think it should have been more, I don't know. I think they missed an opportunity.
Especially because they brought back 90s version of Salem, who's like this stuffed cat puppet looking thing that has a weird moving mouth and he talks now. I mean, that would have fit.
Yeah, no, I think it would have totally fit, and it would have been nicely weird, and it would have been giving you that campiness that you wanted, and you still could have done the other stuff too, I guess. I don't know. That green room was pretty freaking gruesome.
Oh, absolutely. That's they were getting a little heavy on the horror movie aspect in that one, and Ambrose is in charge and he's grinding up parts because we learned that Salem is the Endless and he's in charge and everything revolves around cat food and people drinking milk and cans of tuna. It's so weird.
It was really weird. And again, this episode, you come off an episode where they have a battle of bands and it's goofy and silly. And then you go to this episode. This is like, again, this is like a totally different show.
Yes.
And the episodes, what did you think of the episode? I thought it was fine. But again, you just came off a totally different tone.
I'm with you on the change of tone. I'm a fan of the Truman Show. I'm a fan of Groundhog's Day. I'm a fan of the Twilight Zone twist like that. So I was kind of on board with the episode itself if it was a standalone. But at this point in the season, it seems sort of auxiliary, sort of just cast off, be like, we kind of got to give alternate Sabrina at least some screen time. So here's her one bottle episode, and here it is. Especially with the way they solve it, and with her and Salem escaping. But what did you think?
Well, yeah, I, it's basically coming off of that other episode. The tone was so different. And again, you have this campy RoboCat in there and this weird laugh track that's going on. And the two ants from the original show, that's all they're really doing to kind of take a nod and address that. They never really, and then you have all the crazy gore in the green room and stuff. So you got this kind of, again, they're doing like, here's campy, but then we're also doubling down on the horror movie gore of this. So this episode was another pick one to me. Either make it go whole hog and make it basically she is now Melissa Joan Hart.
I get it.
And make it real Groundhog's Day where it's the same episode every day.
Yeah, make it even weirder, you know? Yeah.
And you just like take one of the, if I don't know if they have the rights to it, but whatever. I mean, literally take like one of the episodes of the show.
Yeah.
And have her having to do that over. And then she starts realize like, what's going on here? Wait a minute. I'm stuck in a time loop over here. And then it can still be the cat in charge of it. And it can still, I don't know.
No, I'm with you.
They seem to be trying to serve too many masters during this whole season, I think.
Yeah. And especially in this episode, they never really explain anything. Like, they just, this is the way the universe is, and you have to go along with it, but they don't justify anything or put logic behind anything. It's just, there's three strikes, there's a green room, we have stand-ins that sleep under our bed, which is super creepy, but we're not going to explain it, and, weird, yeah. they should have made it an old episode. I thought the cockroach costume was a reference to it. Make it that episode and just do it over and over again to make it go even further. I'm with you.
Yeah. Anyway, basically the long and the short of it is she escapes with the Endless.
Yeah, the Endless.
Hold on.
Yep.
So and part of the thing, too, is like this version of Sabrina Morningstar, like knew nothing about what was going on.
Nope.
With any of the Eldritch Terror stuff.
Yeah, Ambrose isn't around. All the books are props. Yep.
Yeah. But somehow she figures everything. It was, again, here's another like, conveniently, she'll figure it out. Yeah. Don't worry.
She'll get the idea. It'll be the right idea, and she'll just go with it. And she knows, Salem's in charge. I'm going to go talk to the writer and just have a conversation with him and change his mind.
Yeah. The void is coming. Let's get out of here.
Yeah. I know you're the end. Like, he has a power trip at Salem. He's like, I'm the Endless. I can't be ended. And she's like, actually, we have one more episode to go and one more Eldritch Terror, and he's more powerful than you, so you have to come with me. And he's like, okay, let's go.
Yeah. I did like how when they were running away, though, he could change things by, like, rewriting them, by saying things.
Yeah, he was dictating reality. Like, she snaps her ankle. They turn on each other. That was awesome. It was so fun.
That was good.
But they end up, after dictating reality, they do escape, and Sabrina jumps back through the mirror into the original cosmos. Dun, dun, dun.
Yes, and then dies.
I guess is where they told them to wrap it up. Hey, this is your last episode.
Chapter 36, At the Mountains of Madness, the final episode, at least for Netflix, of Sabrina. Because some people are holding out hope that it might get picked up and finished somewhere else.
Maybe in comic books, that'd be fun.
It's never as satisfying when it's in comic books. As a Firefly fan, trust me.
And a Buffy fan. Buffy did it too. But
yeah. So what happens in this episode, Mikey? It's kind of, this episode is really, really, to me, felt like they were trying to tie up loose ends. This episode felt like school's about to start again. We need to end the D&D campaign.
Yeah.
So,
Somebody's going back to work or going back to, yeah.
So we need to like wrap this up. So, this happens, that happens, this happens, this happens. You find the dragon. Everyone roll a d20. Okay, good. The dragon's defeated. The princess is safe. And we'll see you later. Yeah.
Yep. Basically, that's what this is. Sabrina comes back through the mirror. She dies, but not before telling original Sabrina, Spellman, that the void is coming. The final Eldritch Terror is here, and it's consuming everything. So she needs to stop it and then dies, I guess. But Spellman has an encounter with the Trinket Man to return the imp. And I guess that's more evidence that the Trinket Man might be God, because this is sort of just deus ex machina. Like, he shows up when he's needed, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, I need the imp back. And she's like, trade you for, what's that? And he's like, oh, it's Pandora's box. How convenient.
Yeah.
But that is the tool for this episode. It's Pandora's box, which is cool. That's old lore and mythology again. But the plan this episode is Sabrina Spellman's going to take Pandora's box into the void and suck it all up and put it away for good. Trap it like they trapped all the other terrors.
So the episode, here's one of the first things that I really need someone to explain to me.
Okay.
Is why did they not put Sabrina Morningstar into the pit of Cain?
Oh, absolutely.
Because you have, what, like 13 minutes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And she's died in Sabrina's room, which is easily less than a 13-minute walk.
Oh, absolutely.
Over to the pit of Cain. And for those of you who don't know, the pit of Cain is, if you bury a witch in the pit of Cain, they come back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And fine. Like, there's no consequences.
Yeah, especially if you get them there on time. That's the whole reason for the timeline.
Yeah, because Zelda was constantly killing her sister and then burying her in the city. It was basically like their thing. When she annoyed her, she just kill her and then bury her in the pit.
Such a great bit.
Yeah, it was a great bit. So I have no idea why they didn't do that.
Especially because they're spending all this season like fast traveling for the whole thing. Like, they teleport everywhere between hell and earth, between like Baxter High and the Academy. I mean, why not? Just teleport to the pit.
I mean, I know that they did it as writers, I know that they did it for a place for Sabrina's soul to go later.
Yep.
But it doesn't make any sense why they didn't do it.
Yeah. They had to wrap it up. They had to move things along, I guess.
Right. So the deal is that she's going to take Pandora's box into the void and open it up and suck in the void, but she might get sucked up too.
Yes.
And of course, she doesn't tell anybody. She like basically writes a suicide note and then heads off into the void, which, what did you think about the void having its name written on the wall?
This is another sort of disconnect for me. They could have done a much better job on the void. With as cool as they did the darkness and the weird and the perverse, this just reminded me so much of The Good Place, that Kristen Bell Ted Danson show. I mean, that looks like how it looks inside Janet, who is a void herself, you know? I mean, that's all I could think of, and it was way too light, way too empty. I mean, yes, it's the void, but I didn't buy it.
Yeah, I didn't mind it being a big, white, empty room, because it's kind of like how THX-1138 were the big empty rooms that were in that one. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but I didn't mind that. I minded it like literally in like big sans serif font on the wall. It just said the void.
Yeah, and then it shows
like,
up on Earth.
Just in case you don't know where you are. Just in case you don't know where you are.
Welcome to the void. Yeah, that just reminded me again. Welcome to the good place. Like,
yeah, I know. And then it's backwards on the wall and the other. I don't know what was going on. It was so bizarre.
Yes,
but then her family messed everything up.
They really
did. She was about to save the man. They could have put Morningstar in the pit of Cain, right? Sabrina goes ahead and takes Pandora's box into the void.
Yes,
sucks it up. Oh no, she's gone. And the other one's like, here I am. It's like, okay, hooray. Happy ending.
Yeah, double Sabrinas, let's fight it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, because the other one got sucked into the void. So there you go. Problem solved, happy ending, everyone's good. Show's over, nice wrap up.
Yeah.
There you go. But no, her family's like, oh no, Sabrina's in the void, what do we do? Well, let's take her soul out of her body and put it in the other Sabrina.
Yeah.
The body that we have in the basement that we didn't put in the pit of Cain for some reason, so we could do this now. It's just...
I'm with you. I have to give it a thumbs up, because this is actually what I was fighting for the whole season. It's an example of something going wrong where the first idea doesn't work. So I'm all for that, but it's way too late in the game. This is the last episode. You can't pull that trick now. But of course, Plan B works. Yeah, they do suck out Spellman's soul and put it in Morningstar's body, and now the void is inside her. We get the ancient X-ray again, and we discover that, oh yeah, all your organs are gone. Your outline is even more of a simple child's drawing, and it's just an outline.
Yeah.
That was a cool scene, though, with Sabrina having the void inside her. They try and go back to normal, but they rile her up and she starts making things and people disappear. Like she starts blooping them out of the existence and just sucking her into her own void. Oh, that was awesome.
That was kind of cool. It's because, and then Lucifer shows up and he's like, hey man, I want my daughter back.
Yeah. I want my original daughter back. You mean nothing to me.
Yeah. So I brought an army of miners. What all the miners in this one being an army, but I brought an army of miners with me. And then Sabrina bloops them all away. And of course, one of them's Harvey's dad.
Yep. And then eventually Roz, yeah.
Yeah. She started blooping away everyone Harvey loves, which I guess could have led to something. But nope, we need to end the episode.
Yeah.
We need to end the series, like right now.
No time to be sad, Harvey. It'll be all right in about 20 minutes. You just got to come with me to the next scene.
So then how does she end up with Father Blackwood?
So here's where we get more cool Eldritch Terror lore, which I'm a big fan of. But this is where we get the first appearance of the Mountains of Madness, which is, you know, the outer realms of the cosmos where the terrors originate from. But because Sabrina realizes she has the void in her, she goes to Blackwood. And Blackwood is like, I can train you how to, because Blackwood is now no longer headless. We skipped all over that. But Blackwood is immortal and can't keep him down. So he gets his body back. But with that, both Blackwood and Sabrina go to the Mountains of Madness, and he's trying to help her control it. So she's no longer a threat, and it's just another trap terror like everything else.
But his plan is to control it, become it, be it.
Reunite it with the rest of the void, because apparently it's just a piece of the void in Sabrina for reasons they never explain, but they just tell us that's how it is, and he's trying to reunite it to still bring about the end of all existence.
So then, and then her family comes and finds Sabrina there, and she like comes out all like weird and but with the same haircut,
just,
headband.
Yeah, just hasn't had a shampoo in a few weeks.
Oh my gosh, that was the silliest, most least intimidating. It looked like she just had been on a bender. It looked like she had just drank too much and hadn't slept.
And where'd she get those crutches? They don't have those at the Mountains of Madness. I mean, come on. Did Faustwood make those? No.
Why does she even need them? I don't understand.
Because the void is consuming her. It's draining her of her life power just to control it. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
At least that's my guess. Like I said, they don't explain anything. They got to wrap up all these stories. And the solution now is to drain the void out of Sabrina, because she finds out that all the people she blooped out of existence and ate into her voidness are actually still there. Don't worry, they're okay. They're just hiding in your empty tummy, the space vacuum that is inside your body.
Yeah, and if we drain the void out, we can open a gate to the void, because that's what Father Blackwood built.
Yeah, it's a stargate. No, it's a void gate.
And we'll put ropes around people and send them in with all the other Eldritch Terrors, and then Nick will suck everyone up with Pandora's box. And hooray, happy ending, right?
Yeah, solution. But no, they kill Sabrina. Like, this is the ultimate, they knew they were being canceled. They just had to tie up, I guess, whatever loose ends they felt like. And they say, okay, I guess she can die. We're not going, there's no more story after this. So let's kill off Sabrina Spellman, the main character. What? Oh, come on.
Here's where we get to the point, the big sticking point of this, the biggest spoiler, but also I think the biggest disappointment. Didn't make any sense. Now, here's the thing that some people complain about. Why didn't you bloop Sabrina back and then put her in the Pit of Cain again?
There you go.
But they made a point, though, of showing the Banshee. And when the Banshee shows up, that means that a witch's true death happens. So they made a point of doing that.
Oh, that's who that lady was. Okay.
Yeah, that was the Banshee. So they were letting you know that she's dead. But at the same time, in this show, that doesn't really seem to matter a lot of times anyway.
Nope.
And then also, too, none of this would have been a problem if they had stuck the original Sabrina in the pit.
Exactly.
Or the Morningstar version of Sabrina in the pit, which it drives me crazy because it makes no sense. Because I think the first thing that would come to Sabrina's mind while the other Sabrina's dead in her arms is get her to that freaking pit.
Exactly.
Like right now, because she put people in the pit before.
Yeah, it's a common occurrence.
Yeah. And I don't know, man. I don't know if they were afraid that all the bad things would happen again. But to me, it's like, okay, that didn't work. Put her in the pit and let's come up with another plan now.
Yeah.
It's just, there's way too many leaps. There's way too many like, hey, we need to figure out how to wrap all this stuff up
yep.
right now. But I don't think killing her was the answer.
Maybe that's just sort of a thumbing of the nose from the creators to Netflix, being like, all right, we know we're canceled. You're not going to support it. So we're just going to burn it to the ground, maybe? Could you kill off your main star when there's, like we're saying right here, there's so many other narrative choices you can make. We don't know. They take out her human friends completely. We don't know how they deal with Sabrina's death. You know, like Hilda and Zelda are somehow rendered useless for the first time ever after being powerful with the new Church of Hecate for the whole season. I mean, yeah. That all just goes away. It's like Sabrina made her choice. She's going to die.
Yeah, there is so much that goes away, too. And then you're also dealing with Sabrina Morningstar. Okay, so you don't put her in the Pit of Cain.
Mm-hmm.
So she died, right? But where did her soul go? Where is it?
We don't know.
That's the thing. They are able to pull Sabrina's soul out of the void to put in the other body. But where's that other soul gone to?
Exactly.
Exactly. There's been so many other times in the show where death did not mean death that it makes no sense that all of a sudden it does. For both versions of Sabrina.
Yeah. I mean, they also did the thing where Sabrina Spellman's body was still out in space in the void somewhere after they took her soul out, and they used the weird as a breathing apparatus for Nick to go grab her out of space. Like, if you can do that, you can do other things than just let main Sabrina Spellman die. Ugh.
Yeah. It just doesn't jibe with everything else that was going on. And then also, too, here's another way to get out of it. And I don't know if they maybe are planning on, maybe we can get out of it if we ever do come back.
Mm-hmm.
But there was that whole scene where we find out that Mambo Marie is actually that voodoo god of the death.
Baron Samedi, yes.
Yeah, we actually find out that that's Baron Samedi because she slash he, him, Zimzer, anyway, has to lead the dead from that episode of the dead back into the realm of the dead. So, I mean, you could easily have, since that was like the lover of Zelda, you could easily have like, hey, you want Sabrina? I got her here, you know?
Yeah, let's play a game for her. Yeah.
Here you go. Yeah, something. But anyway, you sound disappointed. I was disappointed. I was like, this makes no sense. You can't. Nerds complain about this all the time. When you're writing, you make rules to your universe.
Yes.
So when you start breaking the rules of your universe, you lose us as nerds. Me as a nerd, for sure.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm with you. And like, they did such a good job leveling up the threat that they could have had better solutions to it other than just, it's this way because that's what we're doing and we're going to make it work even if we don't explain it. That's just, it seems lazy. It seems rushed. And it does take me out of it as a nerd that wants a little bit more, especially because the first three parts were so great.
Yeah, I was disappointed. Do you want to do a pizza rating, Mikey?
We can. And I just want to point out the final point. This is a little bit of contention. The final point is Sabrina's in the afterlife and Nick shows up and they kiss happily ever after. That's it. Like, what? Ugh, what a lame last moment for an episode.
Yeah, that's. I forgot about that. She's in the room that looks a lot like the void, but it looks like an art gallery. And she's reading a book and it literally has the Sweet Hereafter written in that Hobby Lobby font.
The Good Place font, yeah.
Yeah, and then Nick shows up and she's like, what are you doing here? And he's like, I went swimming in the Sea of Sorrows. Heck of an undertow. Anyway, let's start kissing. You know, and a lot of people have taken contention with this, saying like, this is insensitive to teen suicide. And he never said I'd offed myself.
At least from my perspective, it seemed like, oh yeah, I committed suicide and here I am. Congratulations.
So you thought that too?
That's how it came across to me.
It didn't come across to me at all that way, because plus two, Nick, he looks the same always. So this could have happened 50 years later, since time is endless. There's the Sweet Hereafter.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he could have literally just been trying to get on with his life and like, oh, I'm going to go swimming in this Sea of Sorrows. Or maybe it's like, if you swim in the Sea of Sorrows, it makes you happy again. I don't know what the mythos of the Sea of Sorrows is.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he got caught in the undertow.
Accident.
Or maybe it was the Sea of Sorrows being like, okay, I know how to make you feel better. I'm going to take you to what you're lamenting.
Oh, even better. There you go.
See? Just going straight to suicide is so dark to me.
Yeah.
I didn't even think that. I thought I was kind of a dark dude. I guess I'm not. I didn't even go that way.
I like your explanation of it, so that'll make it a little bit easier for me. I'm going to buy into your headcanon rather than just him being like, Sabrina's dead. Oh, Romeo and Juliet. Here I go too. Gonna go take a dip.
Yeah. Anyway. So, Mikey, let's go ahead and just give it a pizza rating. We've talked for like a million hours on this podcast about this show.
We have. We covered a lot of ground, but it was fun. But pizza rating, for me, the main thing that got me through all of this season is that I'm a big fan of Eldritch lore. So I was on board with all the terrors. I like the story and the narrative, but that's balanced out by the Battle of the Bands, which was terrible. And I guess we chalked this up to cancellation, but everything felt rushed and sort of not really thought out as well as previous seasons. So for me, 5 out of 8 slices, but there's barely any cheese on it. Like they made it sloppily. So it's a sloppily made 5-slice pizza for me.
Yeah, I think I am exactly with you on this one. All the things that you said, the thing that got me through this is that I really like the cast. I really like the actors in it. I was invested, and they knew their characters at this point. They knew how to play them. I was really invested just because of who they are. Mm-hmm. I really like Kieran Shipka. And again, like Chance Perdomo is brilliant. I want to see him in a million other things.
Yes.
I wish I was doing things so I could cast him in it. But all of them, everyone's great. None of the characters, or none of the actors or the characters they play when they're on screen make me go like, ugh, can we get on to the next scene? I liked all, and even Dr. down to the supporting, he was like Dr. C. I love that guy. It's just,
oh yeah, yeah.
Just great. So that kind of got me through it. But otherwise, all the other problems we've been complaining about, yeah, I'm with you. I think I'm exactly the same rating, 5 out of 8 slices here, because they just, you know, I want to give them a break that they were rushed, but we sat here and thought of other ways to do it just in the hour 10, 15, 20, whatever we just talked now. Yeah, yeah. And we're not professional writers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, come on, guys. Hey, we've been canceled. Figure it out and leave it open. Leave it more open than like Sabrina's dead and everything else like that. Leave it like, how much better would this have been if Sabrina had secretly buried the other Sabrina there? And then like,
you get the horror movie, like hand coming out of the grave for your last shot.
Something. Or just have that happen. Yeah. Who the heck knows? I don't know.
Yeah. If you're going to pay so much homage to horror movies, like leave it on a cliffhanger, just add that little twist to it. I'm with you.
Right. Even if you never, ever do anything again. Anyway. So everybody, we've babbled on for a long time. Let us know if you're a fan of Sabrina. Did you have as much problems as we did with the final season?
Yeah.
And let us know. You can hit us up on all the social medias at Assuming Pod. If you want to send us a letter, you can Gmail us, assumingpositions@gmail.com. We want to thank you guys so much for listening. We want to thank that guy, Brad, for doing our announcing, Not Scott Productions for equipment, Jazzar for music. And we hope you guys have a spooky rest of the week where the writers give you something satisfying.
Ooh, I am 16
going on 17.